I'm Joe Kane.
I'm Sal Conca.
And this is the Imperfect Podcast.
Don't forget to go to HecklerKane.com and sign up to become an Imperfect Podcast Insider.
To the bumper.
Hey, Joe, welcome to the Imperfect Podcast.
Yeah. So, happy Halloween, man.
Happy Halloween to you, sir.
This is getting released the night before Halloween, but it's still counting as our Halloween special. So.
Yeah, most people probably won't listen to it until the next day, so we're good.
Yeah, that's good. This is our second annual Halloween special.
Yes, except this year we're not doing any, what were those?
Bean-boozled.
Bean-boozled.
Yeah.
Yeah, those nasty booger-tasting jelly beans.
You know, it's funny, my kids... bought a new batch of Bean Boozled. You hear me? I'm already getting all like kinds of verklempt here. Verklempt.
That was pretty funny last year, though.
For just thinking about the Bean Boozled thing, it's really gross.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we are the Imperfect Podcast. This is what happens when you don't have a guest. We're gearing up for the American film market to go chat with folks in the industry about Seymour the Unfortunate Vampire.
Yeah.
But we're going to have some fun today. We got our bottle of wine, Apothic Dark here. How appropriate for our Halloween episode.
I don't know what camera I should face that at.
And we have our lovely guest here.
Eugene. Eugene is with us at every podcast, but he's usually hidden in the set somewhere. But it's appropriate to take him out for Halloween, I guess.
Exactly. So Joe and I, though, we're going to talk about our top five indie Halloween horror movies.
Now, there may be some discretions here about indie, because indie doesn't necessarily mean that there's no budget. Well, and some of these have a decent budget to them.
I've heard many a podcast debate what constitutes an indie film. So it does not mean without budget. It means not attached to a major studio. So
there's really only five major studios.
Correct.
So
maybe four with consolidations these days.
Yeah, well, they're all buying each other out. So
exactly. So we're gonna take some liberties here, and we're just gonna have some fun. And you know, if you guys agree or disagree with my choices or Joe's choices, feel free to leave us some comments. You know, on the podcast, or shoot us a note on Twitter at Heckler Kane Inc. And we'll gladly debate with you all day long.
But Sal's wrong, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Well. Yeah. So how this is gonna go down is Joe's gonna give a movie in his list, and then I'm gonna give my rebuttal to his pick. Who knows? Maybe we'll match on some.
That would be very neat. We haven't seen each other's lists, so it's a matter of like debate. So
exactly. So Joe and I are gonna have a little fun today.
Yeah.
So Mr. Kane.
Yes, sir.
What comes in at number five?
Number five for me, I went for something nostalgic. I said, you know, I have to have something on this list that we're doing a top five list. I have to have something on the list that's going to be kind of a predecessor to everything. And it's definitely the oldest one on the list. I almost guarantee, unless you matched me on this.
Mm-hmm.
It came out in 1922 by Film Arts Guild.
Jesus Christ.
It's Nosferatu.
Well, I got to say, that would be the most indie of independent horror films.
You can't complain that that was done by a studio. So,
no, I'm not going to knock it for being independent, but I got to give you props. Nosferatu, definitely a all-time classic.
Well, it inspired all of the Dracula and other vampire flicks to come for ages.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first vampire flick. So, I'm giving it nods as number five on my list.
Yeah. I mean, people were terrified when this movie came out. I mean...
Oh, absolutely. And so it's laughable now. I mean, looking at it, but...
But so is, like, I mean, I can have a giggle at The Exorcist in some regards, you know.
Sure, sure. Some things start to get dated, and you go, okay, well, the problem is that the 1922... was very dated.
Yeah, well, it was a silent, not a silent film.
No, it was a silent film.
It was a silent film, yes. Well, in my head, I said silent film, but I was like, but wait, there was music, and I'm an idiot, so.
Wasn't completely silent.
It was black and white, though.
It was black and white.
For all you kids out there, there used to be no color.
Yeah, it's funny, because my daughter said to me the other day, she goes, oh my God, that was such an old thing, and she goes, "When? What are you talking about, and... She was talking about a Duran Duran video that came out, and she goes, yeah, what it was like, what, done in the 80s? I said, yeah, like, very good, you know? And she goes, yeah, well, isn't that in black and white? You guys didn't have color TVs back in the 80s.
Oh.
What a dig.
Wow. She must have seen that aha video for Take On Me. I think that's maybe she was confused by something. Yeah, kids do say the darndest things.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your number five?
All right, so I went a completely different route for you on my fifth pick.
It came out this year, didn't it?
It's a little more recent.
Okay.
Came out in 2016.
Okay.
You can currently watch it on Netflix, released by Intrepid Pictures and directed by Mike Flanagan. It's a film called Hush.
Ooh, very good one.
If you haven't seen it, highly recommend it. Hush, it's a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was a modern day throwback to Hitchcock, I feel like. It built so much suspense. This was not a slasher flick. This was not about the gore. And the fact that it's called Hush, there's a lot of silence in the movie. It actually is about a young woman living alone, and she's deaf.
Mm-hmm.
So this predator comes to, you know, invade her home, so to speak, and it completely plays on every fear you have about being alone in a home in the woods.
Yeah.
So this movie, you know, and so, you know, I'm an adult now. And
sure.
I
we hope.
Not so long ago, I was still living alone by myself, and I watched this by myself, and I gotta say, I was a little creeped out. So
I remember you calling me and going, you have to watch this movie.
Yeah.
You have to watch this movie. It's amazing. And I got to apologize. I never watched it.
Yeah. I'm not going to. Whatever. I'm going to keep the language clean. So so for the rest of the people, if you don't want to be a Joe, you can go out and watch Hush. I highly recommend. Totally. It's still on Netflix. Now's the time to watch it if you haven't already. So that's my number five. So far, we're agreeing on each other's picks. Good picks.
Yeah. No, I agree from what you've told me about that movie.
Well, yeah. Well, you need to do your homework, sir.
Yes, yes, yes.
Next.
This next one you've definitely seen.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have seen. And the reason for having seen it at the time we saw it was there was a big controversy about this movie when it was released.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was that everybody was thinking that this was real. And I think you know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. The Blair Witch Project. It was by Artisan Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And it was released in 1999. I had to look down at my notes for
directed
that.
Directed by Eduardo Sanchez.
Yes. And Daniel Myrick? Myrick, I think I pronounced the name correctly. Daniel, if you're out there, sorry.
It turns out that is my number four
pick.
Oh,
no way! We just gave ourselves a high five for those listening. Good pick, right?
My number four pick. Combining high 8 video with black and white 16mm film, this film became a instant cult classic.
Absolutely.
And for the reason you mentioned a second ago, was like back then when you watched this film in 1999, there was an air of like, shit, is this real?
Yeah. Well, what happened was all of the press and everything that went out on it was saying that it was real. And the actors were like sequestered. They didn't let the actors go out anywhere. They weren't doing publicity tours on this thing. So it was like, oh, these aren't actors. These are people who were dying in this woods from this Blair Witch or Jersey Devil, as it was kind of a different look on it.
Well, and it created the genre.
Oh, sure.
Called found footage.
Sure, sure.
If I'm misspeaking, I don't know, but I found footage didn't exist until Blair Witch.
It was.
Whether
it existed or not, it was definitely a pioneer in that.
Well, for a feature film
thing.
I don't think there was found footage done that way as a feature. And, you know, the whole premise, you know, if maybe you're a youngin' and you haven't seen this film yet or you were doubtful about it, I mean, it's going to give you a rush.
Sure.
And it's one of those films that still to this day, I think it still holds up. I mean, they recently tried to do a remake. I didn't even have any interest in going to see it because
I didn't even know they did a remake.
I don't know if it was a remake or a reboot or if it's actually just part two, but you can't.
They did a sequel.
Yeah.
And it totally flopped.
It's going to flop because all of the surprise and all of the what made it genuine from the get-go is all gone now. You can't replicate that again.
I actually saw the thing in theaters.
Me too.
I remember going into theaters, and there's a prologue on it and a postlogue, and they were, I mean, as far as watching this movie, you thought these people were actually dying, and like, mm-hmm. how can they get away with, like, you know, putting people's deaths on screen for real?
Yep.
And that's what we thought we were watching, and that was a big part of the hype.
It's pretty cool, and I was doing my research before, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. I mean, just for the filmmakers out there, this film was not quick to make.
Uh-uh.
They conceived of this fictional legend of the Blair Witch in 93. They wrote a 35-page screenplay with the dialogue to be improvised. That wine's kicking in. And they did a casting call in Backstage Magazine, because there was no Backstage.com back in the 90s.
I was a subscriber to Backstage, by the way, mm-hmm. in my acting days.
They started production in 97 with principal photography taking place in Maryland. They shot it in 8 days and with about 20 hours of footage, edited down to 82 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, from a filmmaker's perspective, you think about really what they accomplished with Blair Witch.
Yeah.
And how long that process took. I mean, you know, we all just hear the marketing story and the glitz. I mean, the movie did blockbuster numbers at the box office. It grossed nearly $250 million worldwide.
Well, do because it was well publicized.
Yeah, well, it had a huge, huge marketing push and budget behind it.
But listen, we've said this about any film and anything that we've been doing or anything we've come in contact with. If you don't market it, if you don't get it out there and you don't get it seen, nobody will come and watch it.
Yep. Yep. And it's just, it's one of those projects, complete indie. These guys went out, did this on their own. I mean.
And they didn't shoot with, like, fake cameras either, which fake cameras being like consumer level cameras. Polaroids? That was all done in post. That was the thing about this. It was done in post to make it look like a consumer home camera, which is kind of funny if you think about it, because wouldn't it have been cheaper and easier to just use a consumer camera?
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of the allure and the trick of it all, that they could really hone in exactly what they needed, which they couldn't necessarily hone in on a consumer level camera.
Yep. I think the interesting thing too as filmmakers is the story technically documents three filmmakers that went into the woods.
Oh yeah.
So it's a little like a great little nod, you know, as filmmakers, they made this and they said, well, how are we going to get these guys? Why would they be in the woods with these cameras, right? So thinking about the Legend of Blair Witch, creating that storyline about, and that's why it works. It's why it's believable. It creates part of the
believability.
Because
I could see us grabbing cameras and going out in the woods trying to find a legend of the Jersey Devil.
I can't keep you in the Massapequa Preserves past sundown.
Yeah. I'm a homebody, you know. I do my thing.
Yep. Well, there's no doubt Blair Witch, I believe, definitely needs to be in that top five list.
Yeah.
Everybody's top five list.
Well,
I mean,
we agree, and even the spot in the list, which is great.
I know. If anybody, you think something else should be in that spot, let us know. I'd love to hear what, or if you hated Blair Witch, let us know that too.
Yeah. Hit us up at Heckler Kane Inc.
Yep.
So. Number three are we on?
We're on three already.
I lost track. Two in. Mine was my next pick was released in 1981, and it set two careers on fire, basically, and kept them going, and they're still very big entities now.
Mm-hmm.
It's Evil Dead.
Oh, the Evil Dead series.
The original Evil Dead was a straight up horror film.
Yeah.
And then it turned into comedy, which, don't get me wrong, I love the sequels. It may be one of those times where the sequels definitely...
I think Evil Dead 2 is actually more popular than Evil
Dead
1.
Yes, Evil Dead 2, to me, may have been a better film, but being nostalgic mm-hmm. and going, okay, well, this is where it came from for mm-hmm. me, makes me want to put Evil Dead into that third spot for me.
Okay.
It launched the careers of Sam Raimi. It launched the career of Bruce Campbell, which I am a diehard Bruce Campbell fan. And
who
Bruce, if you're listening, I've reached out to you at least a dozen times to try to come on the podcast. And he keeps ignoring me, but I mean, he's too big. That's the...
I know. We're never going to get Bruce on the podcast, so sad for us. If anybody else is listening and wants to bug Bruce Campbell about like coming on our podcast, we'd love to talk to him.
Yeah. Actually, it was funny because Bruce was the one that we were reaching out for last Halloween. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was campaigning to get Bruce on here, and I actually got an email back from his management.
Oh, nice.
That said, you know, not cease and desist, but you know, thank you anyway.
Joe clearly has an internet restraining order against Bruce Campbell. Holy shit!
No. You know, a huge Bruce Campbell fan. He was in the Spider-Man series, and you guys who listen to the podcast know I'm a huge comic book fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's just a monster B movie guy.
Yeah.
So.
I liked him in Burn Notice.
Oh, he was excellent. He was excellent in Burn Notice. Burn Notice, he was in... what was that series he was in? He played Santa Claus.
Oh, shit. I don't even know.
Oh, my God.
Am I going to have to do the internets thing?
He played Santa Claus for one episode. It was just like a guest starring role. And he was in... I was watching it, and... not a great series, but for some reason, I started watching and kept going. The Librarians.
Gotcha.
He was in The Librarians for a guest spot, and I remember going, oh, cool, it's Bruce Campbell.
See, my favorite Bruce Campbell is Army of Darkness.
Yes, but that's in the same series.
It's in the same series.
It's in the same series.
You know, it was Army of Darkness for me was at that right age for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to wait to see Evil Dead when I was older just because I didn't catch it. It just, you know, just timing-wise, it never caught up to me, and I had to watch it when I was older. And like we said, you know, older movies, they sometimes don't translate. You kind of go, sometimes it's rough to watch some of these old horror movies.
I had watched The Evil Dead first, and it was one of those random things. Like, my parents were like, oh, yeah, you can watch this or whatever, and my father, I think, had seen the second one. So it was later on after it was released. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking 1981. I would have been somewhere in that range, 4 or 5. So I didn't see it when it was first released.
You don't know how to do math, do you?
Oh my God!
You would have been three.
Three. Okay, that's close enough. I'm this many.
Oh my God, Joe.
So you know, I didn't see it on its first release.
Obviously,
I believe my father had seen the more comedic version of The Evil Dead 2. Or mm-hmm. Army of Darkness, even at that point.
That was Army of Darkness was in the 90s, like 92.
It was in the 90s.
That's
why
I was
I'd seen it. But that was the throwback for me, was going and going, I had seen Evil Dead first.
Gotcha.
And I remember the Necronomica, which was the book in the series that was the haunted book or whatever. And I remember going, I want one of those.
I was busy watching all that crap. I was like Army of Darkness, Tales of the Crypt in the 90s. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff was like killer for me. So I have a much bigger play for my number three spot.
I'm curious. Go for it.
I went big on number three, which could be controversial for some people. I'm sure there's people that are going to say, well, how the hell wasn't that your number one and blah, 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 blah. I have my reasons.
You went big.
I went big for my number three spot.
Well, we're getting up there. The top three is still big.
Oh, I know. I mean, listen, some other podcasts, they do top tens and things like that. We're trying to keep it short and sweet here. So we're going with it. We made it more difficult on ourselves, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, it's hard to choose.
To choose five. Because even as we're talking, I was like, oh, shit, I didn't include that movie.
Well, we're gonna do a list of honorable mentions before we do our number one.
For sure.
So.
So my number three pick, I'm going with Halloween.
On Halloween.
I'm going with Halloween on Halloween, 1978. I was 1 year old.
1978, I was not born until December. I was born in December 1978, and for those of you trying to do the math, I'm 38 years old. I'm proud of it. Screw it. I have no hairline.
There you go. Well, so John Carpenter's Halloween. I mean... released at the production company, Compass International Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
What else can you say? Halloween, Michael Myers. He is the epitome of evil.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
As a horror icon and character, there is nothing that depicts fright and terror and set the bar for slasher film.
Absolutely.
I feel like
the something that appealed to me very much on that, if you look at other series, let's say Jason or Freddy or those series, there was a lot of blood.
Mm-hmm.
There was not that much blood in Mike Myers.
This is why I like movies
like
Hush.
It was more psychological.
This is why I like movies like Hush. Yeah.
And, you know,
so that's my vein of I like to the less is more
mm-hmm.
effect.
Yeah.
And, you know, really thinking about that Halloween. It's funny because I just rewatched the Halloween remake that was directed by Rob Zombie. And even that holds up.
I have to tell you, and I got to give props because there's been a lot of there's been remakes of all these horror films that were classics. You know, Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street, and all these were classics mm-hmm. that were now remade.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the remakes don't hold up necessarily.
We know. You don't even have to say it. They suck.
But the Rob Zombie, the Rob Zombie Halloween. I'm trying to be polite.
Whatever. Nobody's listening. Don't worry about it.
Nobody's listening. Well, we have connections to some people who have done some of these remakes, so I don't want to be rude.
Who do we know?
I'm not going to get into it.
We know people? Shit, we why haven't people. They been on the podcast?
I know. because we've belittled them on the podcast.
Because they're too big for us.
Yeah, whatever. It's the... You know, Rob Zombie definitely did the series justice.
Yeah.
There are a lot of the sequels that are still on the original canon, part mm-hmm. of the original canon, which were not done even remotely as well as Rob Zombie redid the original.
Exactly, and that's exactly the point. Some of those Halloweens, as they got further and further down the line, you could see what happened, especially in the 90s. There mm-hmm. was like a horror craze. It was Freddy, Jason, and Freddy meets Jason and all this crap that mm-hmm. was going on. And those Halloween movies just started to lose their spunk. It was awful.
Yeah.
But if you go back, I mean, you know, you're talking about launching Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
First time on screen.
But you know what? And what a career she's had.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe she'll come on the podcast.
Well, look at her. I just love that laugh, don't you?
Maybe she'll come on the podcast. But, like, the movie and, like, you talk about the psychological aspects. I mean, literally, he is suffering from psychosis.
Yeah.
You know, his whole character is based around that. So
yeah, absolutely.
Following that story and how he goes back and, you know, to find his sister and the whole storyline is just...
It's outrageous. It's really outrageous. And, you know, they base it around a particular holiday, which we are now celebrating. Happy Halloween again.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah, this is a happy Halloween from Eugene.
Happy Halloween.
Nice. Oh, boy. For all you people at home, please go check out our YouTube channel so you can watch Joe being a jackass.
Well, there's that. And I'm sipping the last. Look at this. I'm filling the last.
Joe didn't even ask me if I wanted it.
No. Well, you still have a full glass, and I've already gone through.
There we go.
So
it's like when I take my girlfriend to dinner, and she has a glass of Riesling.
Apothic dark.
It's good because she doesn't listen to the podcast. She'll never hear this.
Oh, this is good. Okay, good. So we can say all things about
her. We can say anything we want.
No, I love her.
Yeah, didn't,
you know that.
I know. So do I. But didn't Brim come in? Brimstone, when he was here, he was like, who's listening to your podcast? Oh, yeah, it just must be all
it's
your wives.
All your wives. Wives
all right.
Shout out to Brimstone there.
Exactly. Brimstone was awesome. He's traveling like a crazy man in L.A. right now. I just saw his picture of him on the set of The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Sitting in Sheldon's spot.
Very cool. That's neat.
Has nothing to do with Halloween, but
no.
But it was still fun.
But good for Brim.
Exactly. All right. We are up to number dos.
Number dva?
Dos Equis.
De? I don't know. Is that that's French, right? De?
De.
Un, deux, trois, quatre, sept. Oh, one, two,
eins,
five
fein.
In French. Eins, fein. I'm done after that.
Yeah.
Hanadul, set, net.
Yeah.
Korean. Got a couple of things. Anyway, we're up to two. I would tell the year in a different language, but I think it would just be a disaster.
Disaster.
1974, pre-US, 1974. I keep going back for oldies because I just...
You're an old soul.
I'm drawn to these classics and I'm going to say the originals because this one has had a remake done. And you know what? The remake had justice done to it. It wasn't horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But and it was well done, the remake. But you still got to go back to the classics for me and go, what did that come from? Drum roll.
That's the worst drum roll
on the planet. We have a drum about 3 feet away from us that we could get, but I'm not going to go there.
Just bring it on. Number two.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. Is that an indie?
That is an indie film.
Who put that out?
Bryanston Pictures? I've never heard of them. Bryanston Pictures.
That didn't even pop on any of my lists.
No. It's real indie. It's real indie. As far as it goes, looking at indie film stuff, this was quite a breakout. It made quite a few bucks. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, for 1974 money, and it's still, I'm sure, raking in money all these years later, because what a classic. You know, you follow the story of a guy who basically chops people up with a chainsaw. I mean, I'm being very broad on that.
What do you mean?
But it gets back into what we've been saying about the psychological. It had the components of a slasher film. It had the components of, like, the girl running and falling down. And then him dragging her back and, you know, chopping her up with a chainsaw. And there was blood and there was gore. But it was the psychological mindfuck of these kids that broke down in a van and basically, you know, went to this house for help and got slaughtered. To me, it was very reminiscent of being trapped in there and really not being able to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you bring up the stats on the box office? Because that would have been a good thing for me to research, but I didn't.
I can give you the box office on that. Let's
okay.
see. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's not here on Rotten Tomatoes, so actually I can't. But I was looking at his other stuff. The director, Tobe Hooper.
He wrote it and directed it.
Yeah, so he's an interesting cat. Do you know his other films?
I don't, actually. What are his other films?
I'm looking at his stuff, right? So he starts with Texas Chainsaw Massacre back in 74.
Yep.
And he goes, he produced a lesser-known film, Eaten Alive, which clearly nobody knows. But then he moves into Salem's Lot.
Okay.
And
that's a classic.
Exactly. And then in 82, Poltergeist. So, hello.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then he directed Invaders from Mars.
Come to the light.
Exactly. Well,
what's the kid's name in that?
Carol Ann.
Carol Ann. Come on. To the light. That's a horrible impression, sorry.
He's got a career. I mean, he did... Well, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
He's got a career as opposed to other filmmakers who don't.
You know, horror filmmakers, sometimes they get, you know, it's tough.
Sometimes they fizzle.
Yeah, or they rely so much on their series of movies, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he could have easily just, like, he directed Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, but, like, in 86, which is almost over 10 years later.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't like he was putting out Texas Chainsaw.
He wasn't going back to revisit it. For monetary purposes, he was going back to revisit it because he came up with another story by that point.
He's involved with all the other Texas Chainsaw, because there's multiple. There's Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 2003. There's the Texas Chainsaw again in 2013. He produced them all. That would be the
tie that I was talking about with the remakes. Mm-hmm. Now, it's cool that he had his hand in that.
Producing,
but he still, you know, still had his hand in those, because it's kind of a tip of the hat to, you know, the next generation that's taking it over.
My number two,
yeah,
takes a complete detour from where you were.
Oh boy,
like
oh boy.
So
the never ending story.
I wouldn't consider that unless you're six. That's not a horror. So, I mean, even Davi watched that, and then I'm going with Shaun of the Dead.
Okay, so I debated that one.
So I just because our love of horror and comedy, and no, did it scare the pants off me? No, it's not that type of horror. But in terms of the genre of horror comedy, I mean, this there's some others I love, like Zombieland and even The Lost Boys. But Twinkies. these are not what I would consider indie. I mean, Shaun of the Dead, one, British. Two, it won a ton of independent film awards for the film in 2004.
See, I debated back and forth whether it was actually a indie or not.
It's focus features.
It gets back to that monetary number. It cost a lot. It was a big budget film, but...
I know, so you can shit all over me if you want, but...
I do that on a regular occasion, so it doesn't have to be online here.
I know. Shaun of the Dead, it's my pick. I, it's too good not to include, and, I feel like the movie itself, like that genre of movie, is so hard to do. It's hard to be funny. Uh-huh. It's so difficult. We suck at it.
Yeah, well... But you keep trying.
Oh my god, I keep laughing at my own jokes so bad.
Yeah. You're it.
That's all I got. That's all I got. I'm my own best audience. So yeah, I mean, Shaun of the Dead, Edgar Wright, the film itself moves, the pace of the film is so great. I mean, I think it came after films like 28 Days Later and all that type of stuff.
Yes.
Like the zombie craze. Right, that happened.
It's really a tip of the hat to. I'm gonna say it.
Don't do it.
All right, I won't say it.
Was it your honorable mention or your number one?
No, it was an honorable mention.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
I mean, it's really their comedic take on the Night of the Living Dead.
Correct. Exactly. So which didn't make either of our lists, but still, no. I think if we were in a top 10, it would make the 10.
Sure, absolutely. Actually, we originally started to vamp this list as a 10, and that was on my list.
I know, so there you go. So it would have been on mine too, and I think for time's sake, we cut it to fives.
Yeah.
But Shaun of the Dead.
I got to give you props on that.
Your only disagreement is if it's you feel, but Focus Features is like one of the big independent. They're a major independent player.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been watching Focus Features films for the last 10 plus years.
Sure.
I mean, apparently even more than that because I'm getting really old, like 15 years. So
you are old.
I am. I'm older than you. So screw off. Anyway, here we are. We're at number one, Joe.
Number one. Well, don't we give our before we go to number one?
You want
to
do some honorable
let's
mentions?
Let's do our honorable mentions before we pick our number ones. I think that's only fair.
Fine.
Right?
Well, before we get to number one,
I'm curious what your number one is because I know mine and it's very clear cut and it's
mine is.
I feel like yours is out in left field just by your choices already.
What are you saying? I'm not saying your choice.
No, doesn't
jive with the general public. I would agree with you.
But that's what we're about. Is our opinions on this is what's paramount here.
Exactly. All right. So give me your
honorable mentions.
How many honorable mentions are you doing?
God,
by the way,
I have a whole bunch of honorable mentions that I really love.
I like chose two. So.
You chose two,
but
all
it's
right.
Okay.
I'm going to go down my list. Scream is one of them.
Scream's good.
Scream's one of those things that real quickly, like, I didn't know if it was a independent.
Independent. Who released it?
I don't know offhand. I don't have that info offhand. Sorry. But I didn't think we were going
to
go too fast, too long on
this.
No,
we don't want to. We'll be here forever.
But that was one that I didn't know if it was independent or not. Just running down my list. Saw, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
And these are all, nods to our honorable mentions.
Mm-hmm.
I had to put on here Dracula versus Frankenstein. Because we actually interviewed Sam Sherman, who was the distributor for Dracula versus Frankenstein.
If you've made it this far in the podcast, folks,
yes,
go listen to our interview with Sam Sherman. He is the epitome of the true independent horror filmmaker from the 70s, international independent, was it international independent or independent?
Independent international pictures.
International pictures. Referred to us by Ethan Martin. We went to his home.
Yeah.
We ate cheese nips and sat with his dog and did it's our only two-part interview. So Sam Sherman, responsible for Dracula versus Frankenstein and a slew of other horror movies in the 70s and 80s.
So I had to give a nod to that, Dracula versus Frankenstein. Howling was one. That was one as a kid that really scared the pants off of me, quite literally.
Interesting.
The Fly.
interesting choice. It's,
I don't know if that's necessarily always categorized as a horror film.
It's tough.
But God, what a, it's more of a sci-fi film, I think. But
it is.
God, what a horror film. I remember well, Jeff Goldblum turning into that fly, and it was just, I was absolutely mortified.
Have you ever seen the original black and white?
Oh, like, the original, like in the
it was the black and white.
Yeah, like the
I've never seen it.
50s, I think it
I've
was.
I've never seen it.
I've never seen it. No, I didn't.
On my to-do list.
They're apparently doing a reboot of that.
Another
reboot. That just seems to be the way Hollywood's
yay,
going.
Yay, Hollywood, now. For you and your original ideas. Ooh, yeah.
And then the one other one that I have for honorable mention for me was Paranormal Activity.
Okay.
Liked it.
Overhyped.
Overhyped, per se, and it was still kind of falling into the pocket of Blair Witch, which I already put on the list.
Yeah, I'm a little upset with you on that one.
Yeah.
It didn't fall anywhere near me. It's not worth a mention, so we're going to just move on.
All right, so go ahead. What's your... You have a couple honorable mentions.
Paranormal Activity, just... I don't... whatever. So, in my nod to Rob Zombie... I love Rob Zombie as a director. I think he does some great work, especially after watching Halloween and, again, most recently. I literally watched it like 2 days ago. The Devil's Rejects. If you've not seen... So now this is a sequel to House of a Thousand Corpses. Now, House of a Thousand Corpses was a piece of shit. It was terrible.
Well, that's putting it bluntly.
It was terrible. And, you know, there was a lot of hype around it because it was Rob Zombie, his directorial debut, and he had directed all his music videos, and he's artistic, and da 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 da. And I could go on and on and on. Watch The Devil's Rejects. If you're into horror, you know, you're going to like this movie. You're going to dig it. It's a slasher. Sid Haig is in it, and a bunch of the other horror icons that are, you know, acting icons. So, Devil's Reject, honorable mention for me. Number two. Hostel.
Oh,
yeah, you wish you had that movie on your list. It was very difficult not to put it in my top five. It was tough. I wouldn't have known which to switch out. Like, it was very... Because I don't know. I didn't know what to do. But Hostel...
Good friend of mine from high school was in Hostel 3.
Well...
Heather Matarazzo.
That went nuts after that. But
yeah, but...
I think I watched
I'm not saying that's a good movie.
No.
Sorry, Heather.
Sorry, Heather.
But...
None of our movies are good either, but we've had people in them, so it's okay.
Yeah. Hostel.
It's Lionsgate. It's Lionsgate, which is, you know, still an independent production company. It was 2006, Eli Roth, directed by Eli Roth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, back then when I originally saw it, you know, which is not, it's only like 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like I was a young kid or something. So, I mean, it was one of those horror movies that I watched as an adult. Like I was mentioning before, the mid-2000s had a big overarching. There was a lot of horror that I enjoyed in that period for some reason. It was like the 80s. There was a lot of 80s stuff that I dug.
And then 2000s.
And then it was like the 90s.
The 90s kind of skipped.
Yeah, I think I was busy. I don't know what I was doing in the 90s. But Hostel and then...
I think the big horror film I watched in the 90s was It. That was impactful, but that was 1999.
But it was also a TV made for TV.
It was made for TV. It wasn't the same thing.
It's different. Not like what we just saw.
What we just saw, yeah.
So, by the way, we've seen it. We were debating doing a podcast on it. There's been 1,000 podcasts on it. Go see it.
Go see it.
It is awesome.
Well worth it. Honestly, one of the best horror films of recent.
Yeah, it would be number one on this list in about a second if we were
it's not independent.
And, yeah, it's Stephen King, but phenomenal job. And the last movie I want to mention, if an honorable mention, and I have no idea if it's indie or not, but The Lost Boys still holds up to.
Absolutely.
I love The Lost Boys because I love a good horror comedy. You know, the two Coreys are in there. I mean, and Jamie Gertz. So.
Yes. Yes.
Jamie Gertz. All right.
Settle down.
Okay. So,
number one. See, I feel like this has been built up for the past whatever minutes that we've been talking here, and I feel like you deflated my number one.
Why?
It's your fault.
What'd I do?
Well, it was a movie that was shot in 1978 by John Carpenter, Halloween. I think my list is a little more classic than yours.
Yeah, it's okay.
Which is okay. I think I went more in that classic genre.
You are a classic rocker.
Yes, I am. And basically, Halloween to me was one of the all-time greatest horror films because of what we talked about before. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to get into that again. But it really struck a chord with me. And that is something that, you know, that whole Mike Myers character being this psychological killer that was just like, wow, you put yours at number three, man. And it is Halloween. We're talking about Halloween, man.
I know. Dude, I there's no arguments. I cannot argue with you about having Halloween at number one.
No.
There's no argument I can make. Like, is Shaun of the Dead a better movie than Halloween? No. Really?
But it was above Halloween on your list, so what's wrong with you?
Well, for me, personally, I enjoy a good horror comedy.
Okay.
So it's just, I know, I suck. If I had to do
finally it, you admit it.
You know what? There's no backseas. If I had to do it over, maybe Shaun of the Dead would have been in three and Halloween would have been two.
Okay. All right.
It's not.
But that probably would have deflated my bubble even more because it was like, it would have been too close.
Yes. At least the audience got a breather before you got to say Halloween again.
Yes. All right. So Halloween. That's my number one pick.
Good choice.
Now we're moving. Thank you. Thank you. We're going to move on to you. What's your number one pick? Drum roll.
We're going with Saw. We're going with Saw.
Really?
Saw. It, really? For me, that movie is so gritty and dirty and just psychological at the same time.
Okay.
It has all the elements of... It has... Don't cough over my...
Sorry, man. Again.
It has all the elements of what I want. Me, personally, IMHO, in my humble opinion. Yeah, I did that after two glasses of wine. That's the one. Saw. It's Saw. It's
It was on my honorable mention list.
Directorial debut by James Wan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Saw legacy still lives on. They're still making Saws. And they're cranking them out. I mean... I made it.
A Saw came out this year. I mean, it's not like
Jigsaw. I think there were six Saws, and they were quick.
Oh sure.
Like as opposed to like let's like look at Halloween. Nobody fucking touched. Excuse me. Nobody.
What are you worried about cursing on this podcast all of a sudden?
This is like what are we like 50 minutes in? Nobody would be listening at this point. So so like. Halloween, nobody touched for years before they made, like, the sequels came, but, like, before they really ramped up and, like Halloween 6 came, like, 3 decades
later. Yeah.
Like, or whatever it is. Like, Saw was, like, they just cranked that shit out. That was, like...
Yeah, because they had a gem on their hands. And honestly, I'm not even opposed to all of the sequels. There were a lot of great things that happened in those sequels.
I'm gonna blow it. But when it was, it was Saw 2, and it's the actress that's in Saw 2 that I love because she becomes. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I do know who you're talking about, but I don't know her name, honestly.
Saw. We're doing this live, folks. I am Googling stuff right now, and there's probably like people listening going, oh my God, Shawnee Smith.
Shawnee Smith.
That's her.
Okay. Yeah, no, I pictured her, but I couldn't remember her name for the life of me.
Yeah, and she was in the original Saw too. I'm sorry, she was in the original Saw too, but she was on the other side. Mm-hmm. She was one of his victims,
yes,
so to speak. And so, I mean, her and just everything about those movies for me resonates, and I want to watch. They're the movie I want to watch over and over again.
Yeah,
it's Saw is the horror movie that really never gets old for me, even though I know the answer or I know the outcome.
Like, sure,
Saw, I can just it's fun. It's
a puzzle. It's a puzzle. You have to solve the puzzle.
I know,
which makes it interesting. It's like why do you keep watching procedural dramas?
Yeah,
because you watch those procedural dramas like Law and Order and things like that. Because you kind of know what's going to happen already.
Yep.
But you spend time trying to figure it out. I think that's what Saw has.
Yeah, I do too. And that rounds out our list, man. That's it.
That's it.
Good list.
Good list. You know what? As much as I want to shit on your list, just because it's you.
Hey, everybody out there, let us know. Who do you think's list was better, Joe's list or mine? That's all we want to know.
That's it. Hit us up at hecklerkane.com and sign up to be an Imperfect Podcast Insider.
Yeah, do all the other stuff too. Sign up to our YouTube channel, talk with us on Twitter, because you know you have nothing else to do with your life but listen to us.
Yeah.
So come on.
All right. Happy Halloween, everyone.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Thank you.